Hello, my name is Simon Ward, and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. Hello everybody, welcome back, and it's that time of year. Yes, we are about 10 days from the Ironman World Championships, although by the time you hear this, we'll just be a couple of days before it. And I'm talking to our favourite tipster. It's Tim Hemming. Welcome back, Tim, for the third year in a row.
Thanks for having me back on the show, Simon. Is it 3 years? We've really done it for 3 years.
Wow. Yeah, okay. I'm sure we have. Anyway, if we haven't, it feels like 3 years. But
it feels like a lifetime.
Feels like a lifetime. But anyway, you are now becoming famous with your top 10 predictions for the men and women's field. And so we're going to talk through those. But before we get on to the top 10s, I'd like to just chat about some of the names that you've omitted from your list for various reasons. So let's start with the ladies. Now, I can see that you've not included Michelle Vesterby or Helle Fredriksson in there. Susie Cheatham, who's finished in the top 10 in Kona once or twice. You probably correct me on that. Twice, actually. Yeah. And nor Laura Siddle, who I think it might be her first time racing in Kona, but she's had a great year this year. And debutant Emma Pallant. So what was your thinking behind some of those omissions?
Well, I think it's less to do with the talent that these women have. And as you said, they've been successful. They've won races. Laura Siddle recently won the European Long Course Championship. It's more to do with the strength and depth of the rest of the field and just not a place for them in the top 10. I think it's one of the best things about this race, actually, is the fact that the women's field is now deeper than possibly it's ever been before. Yeah. And also this year, there are a number of interesting debutants. Emma Pallant is an interesting one. She DNF'd in South Africa, and then she raced quite well in Austria. But this is her first start in Kona. It'll be interesting to see how she goes. She's obviously a slightly weaker swimmer, but she's pretty solid on the bike and has the potential to be a really good runner. So, yeah, let's see how she goes on the Big Island. One to look out for. But, as you said, not in the top 10. Likewise, Michelle Vesterby does well here. She's Sarah Pianpiano. She always performs well in Hawaii. However, I've decided that I think there are 10 women that have the potential just to go better.
And one of the things I've observed over the years, both for the men and the women, is that there's nearly always a surprise that comes into the top, around the top five. Obviously, Chrissy, when she first went, she was a surprise that made it to the very top of the podium. But usually there's somebody who's not featured in any of the pre-race talk that just surprises everybody. And I'm sure we'll come on to that in a second. So let's... Okay, well justified on your omissions for the ladies then. On the men's side, who don't we have there that you that you might be? Let's have a look.
There's loads, yeah, on the men's side that we've left out that aren't in the top 10. And
yes,
I think one of the main reasons for that is I've discounted quite a lot that what I'm doing is I'm looking for reasons to discount.
Yeah.
People.
Okay.
So it might be that they don't have the experience. Mm. It might be somebody like Tim Don, whose comeback story is quite well known now, but he broke his neck in Hawaii last year and he's been fighting to get back ever since. It might be someone like Andrew Starkovitz, who we know can bike the house down but can't really run.
What about James Cunnamar, though? Because are you discounting him because they've got a new baby and he's been doing daddy duties? Because he's got a good history of finishing in the top 10. I think he even made it into the top five last year.
He did. James had a great race last year. But I just don't think his performances this year justify him being in the top 10 above the people that we have picked. And it's the same for the likes of Freddie van Leerde. Brent McMahon, who's been under 8 hours five times, never really achieved it in Hawaii.
Ben Hoffman, though. Yeah. But, I mean, Ben was tipped as a potential winner at one stage, but he just seems to have been overtaken by Langer and Sanders recently. And but I wouldn't have thought he was outside the top 10.
Well, I mean, that's what it's all about. It's all about opinions, isn't it?
Sure.
So I do. So I've left him out of my list.
Okay, great. Well, that'll be good. We'll a bit like Lyle Sanders last year. You left him out of your list, and I think I took issue with that one. And I think I might have chalked that one down as a victory to me there. Only one.
Yeah, I'll give you that one. It did come back to bite me. But when we do go into the top 10, it'll be no surprise to anyone that Lyle Sanders is in our top 10. But it might surprise you what position I put him in at.
Yeah, well, let's go back to the ladies. And I did listen to a podcast the other day where somebody had taken issue with the presenter saying, you're not allowed to call them ladies. They're, if you call them ladies, we have to call the guys gentlemen. So are we calling them ladies, women, girls, or just the females?
Well, so far through this podcast, I've been calling them women, so I think I'm going to stick with that. But you call them what you like, and then you can face the backlash from it.
No. I'm sticking with you, Tim. We're in this together. So the top 10 women predictions, then. Let's start. And the first name on your list at number 10 makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck for all the wrong reasons. She comes with baggage, this lady. She's got a doping infraction. She tried to bribe the testing lab. There were allegations, I think, by Jodie Swallow, actually, and a couple of others about drafting from a male partner who was during the race. Lisa Huttala, I mean, she's a good athlete, but I'm not sure that she'd be a popular choice.
No, I think it's safe to say that Huttala is certainly not the most popular women racing in Hawaii this year. She's an interesting case, though. It's her debut. We mentioned there are a few interesting debutants that are starting. She's 35 now. She does pretty well at half Ironman racing, and she bikes well, which is why I've included her. Mm. It'll be interesting to see how she goes. She's one of the bigger athletes, so whether she'll be able to sustain the run in the heat, we shall see. But yeah, if she made it into the top 10, I don't think it'd be the most popular choice.
No, and equally, if she doesn't, I don't think anybody would be too disappointed. But next is an interesting selection. Then we've got Sarah True. Sarah was racing at the 2012 Olympics, part of that American team there. So, and probably better known as Sarah Groff, for those of you who follow the WTS circuit. So, is it her first time in Kona as well?
Yeah, she stepped up to the long distance this year. She ran a 2:54 marathon in Frankfurt in the European Championships there. So she's proven that she's got good running legs. She's obviously had a long history in the sport. People might remember her from London 2012, where she eventually came fourth. I think from memory, she was dropped on that run of 4 to 8 back. So she's quite dogged in some of her performances. She won a couple of World Triathlon Series races, and then she finally made the switch over to the 70.3 distance last year. She's a bit of an unknown, really, and I think that is why she's not placed higher on this list.
All right,
an unknown, not an unknown athlete, but because it's the first time, it's going to be a bit of an unknown factor how she's going to get on, which is why she's only ranked in at number 9.
Okay, but in number 8 we've got a solid performer, somebody who's been around for a while, and somebody who's performed well in Kona, Liz Blatchford. Although you've got a down representative, is she about representing Australia now then?
Well, I think sometimes she identifies as Australian, but I think when we're looking at Hawaii and the Ironman, we're not really representing a country at all, are you? You're probably representing yourself first and foremost.
Okay.
And then the national link is probably less than when you're doing ITU stuff. Now, this could go one of two ways, because she's announced her retirement, so she's packing it in after Kona. So she might, alternatively, it might just be a bit of a farewell saunter down the alley drive at the end. We shall see. I think she races really, really well. She's tactically smart. She knows she's not the biggest biker, but she swims well. She runs fast, and she's a bit like a limpet.
She was racing at Mont Tremblant in August as well, wasn't she? And that was quite a tough race for her with Lauren Brandon and Meredith Kessler. So do you think that might still be in her legs? Although I have heard it said, and I think this is probably true, that the lighter females tend to recover quicker from heavy races than the heavier guys and girls. So maybe that's not such an issue for her.
Yeah, and there's a school of thought that the body composition of women athletes makes them recover slightly better than male athletes anyway. So what do I think? I think it'll probably be an issue if she was actually going to win this, looking at winning this race. Mm. But I think for getting a top 10, I'm not sure that it's such an issue. And it's, again, when you're making these predictions, it's very difficult to know how.
Okay, so next we've got Kaisa Sally. So was that what she was called before? Has she been, got married since then? Because I seem to, was it Kaisa Leitonen before that we know her of when
That's
she had
right,
those?
Yeah,
yeah. So you've got her dropping down to seventh this year. She's been consistently higher than that in all of her previous races, hasn't she?
Yep, she's never finished lower than fifth. And I'm actually putting my predictions that she could perform better than ever before, but still finish seventh. Which might sound slightly oxymoronic, but actually,
yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
Time-wise, she could, but that's just because of the strength of the field. So yes, I think she will do well. She runs well. She's got an opportunity. She sort of sneaks in under the radar somewhat. I wouldn't be surprised to see her go much higher, but I've got her in a seventh for now.
Well, she was one of those that I would sort of put in that category of a surprise when she first finished in the top five a couple of years ago in Kona. So like watching her race as well. She's sort of she reminds me a bit of Lucy Gossage a bit, you know. She always seems to be having a good time out there. And next we have that perennial favourite for the US supporters, Heather Jackson. So Heather still doesn't make it into your top five this year. She had a great race last year.
Yeah, another athlete who you can join us up on the course, but yeah, she's in at sixth. Really super consistent. She doesn't particularly well, but her bike's solid, and then she backs it up with a decent marathon. But the reason she's not higher is just there's five women who you think have potential to go just that little bit better.
Yeah. Okay. And one of those is Sarah Crowley. Then, so she was third last year. But again, you know, not that she's not been picked for a good time, just that you think others are going to race better than her this year.
Yeah, so Sarah Crowley, yep, she was third last year, to her fifth this time around. She's just a really super consistent athlete. Reminds you a little bit, she's Australian, reminds you a little bit of Rita Carfrey, but doesn't run quite as well as Carfrey. Really solid, she's clearly super focused. Coached by Cam Watt, who's sort of from the Brett Sutton School of Coaching. So you just feel like she's improving all the time, and it's to be a fair return for her.
Yeah, I know Cam Watt, actually. I've read some of his stuff. He really prefers this super low cadence, doesn't he? You know, and argues that 75 to 80 RPM is the way to go for long-distance racing, which I'm not sure I totally agree with, but with the right athletes, it can probably work.
Yeah, and some of that open to coaches from the Brett Sutton camp. Although that cadence is a thing that gets associated, they a bit more key to tell that it's really athlete dependent. So someone like Chrissy Wellington might have had a low cadence, but other athletes tend to have a far higher cadence. It just kind of depends on the physiology. And I think also some of your biking background, if you're been brought up as a cyclist, then retain a high cadence because it comes more natural to you.
Yeah, well, let's talk about somebody who, nice segue into that then, somebody who probably doesn't suit a low cadence but has got no problem knowing how to get to the finish in first place in Kona is Marinda Carfrey.
Super high cadence on the super fast runner. She won actually, was it the weekend before last, 70.3 race in Augusta, and one of the local publication put a headline out. So her husband Tim O'Donnell also won the men's race, and a local publication put the headline out, O'Donnell wins 70.3 Augusta, so does his wife, which didn't go down particularly well.
No, I can imagine.
But look, Carfrey, she's on the comeback trail really after giving birth so to baby Izzy. She's won a couple of races this year. She got absolutely, I'm not saying well, she
She got walloped by Dara Reef in a race in Poland, 70.3, where she was beaten by 23 bits, which is a huge amount, and outsplit in all three disciplines. However, if anyone knows how to pick for Kona, it is it's Kav. I mean, it's three-time champion, previous course record. I don't think she can get in shape that she's been in previous years, which is why I put her in fourth place. But it's definitely, if she gets off the bike, I was going to say if she gets off the bike in contention, it's worth watching. But we've given her a run. If she gets off, you should keep an eye out for if whatever time she gets off the bike and see how many places she claws back.
Yeah, I mean, I know she's held the record there, but I always just think that she gives, when you're looking at the girls you've got in, the women you've got in the top three, I think she's going to be giving away too much on the swim, and none of the top three that you've selected are slouches on the bike or the run. And like you say, she's coming back from having a baby. The thing for me about Carfrae is that she's always given a little bit too much time away on the swim, and the three ladies that you have picked to be in front of her are all pretty good on the swim, and I don't think the slouches on the bike or run either. So I just, regardless of whether she was in form, I just wouldn't see that she would be able to pull that time back now. Things seem to have moved on a little bit since she was last in Kona. I think
that's a key point. Things have moved on and the standards got better.
Yeah.
So even if she returns to that level, or just below that level, there's more women there. It's not just Daniela Reef now that she needs to run down. There's people that have come in where it was maybe just Rachel Joyce in the past. There's other athletes that have come in that we'll move on to now with the top three.
Yeah, well, another one stepping up from ITU Racing and coming to Kona for the first time is Annie Haug from Germany. So she's what I call quite a small athlete. And as you've already mentioned, the smaller athletes, if they can swim okay without a wetsuit, tend to do well in the heat. Just I guess a lot depends on how windy it is as well, doesn't it, out on the course, because that's somewhere where they tend to struggle a little bit.
Yes, I think for Anne Haug is that if she can negotiate, she was never the strongest swimmer in ITU Racing, which always put her really on the back foot, often cost her a race before she'd really got started. If she can negotiate, she'll negotiate the swim, but it's whether she can do it without taking too much out of her, if it's rough. Which might make a difference to her. Then she'll be strong on the bike. She always was. She was always one of the best bikers over the short course, and she's proven that since she stepped up. It's then, can she run in the heat when she gets off it? And if she can, you think she's got great potential. Like you said, she's quite a diminutive athlete, so she should shed the body temperature, should stop her body temperature rising too much, or she's got more of a chance than some of the bigger athletes. It would be really interesting to see where she goes. In the Ironman 70.3 world, she ran 75 minutes for the half marathon. Now, she was a long way behind Daniela Reef, who won that race, and Reef ran 76 minutes. So it doesn't necessarily mean she's going to make the inroads to catch Reef, but it does show that she's got good potential.
So up to the top two now. I think this is going to be a great battle this year. It was last year. I think it's going to be closer this year. And in second, you have Great Britain's Lucy Charles. So not making a debut as a pro athlete this year.
I'm going for a repeat of Kona last year and also this year's Ironman 70.3 World Championships. I think Charles is an improving athlete. She's the best swimmer or joint best swimmer in the sport with Lauren Brandon. She's getting stronger all the time on the bike, and it will be particularly interesting if she can. She'll have the lead. It's just how long can she hold the lead? And if she can hold it coming all the way into T2 without Daniela Reef having caught her, that's a bit of a spoiler there for our number one tip. Then, I don't think it'll surprise too many. Then it becomes more and more interesting. If she gets caught relatively early on the bike, which may happen because it's not just Reef that's going to be chasing her down, but a whole bunch of other women, then her challenge, although it may not fizzle out, the challenge for the win, I would still say that Reef is better over the marathon distance, and Charles needs to prove it.
Yeah, okay. Well, so we've had the spoiler. Daniela Reef down again for a fourth time if she manages it. And I have to agree, the way she's been performing this year, she absolutely smashed it in South Africa recently. And like you say, she 116 isn't shabby behind Danny Haug on that course either.
Yeah, and I mean, she, you know, when we say behind Danny Haug, look, Reefer won
on the run.
She was comfortably won the race. Yeah, and she ran a minute slower. I don't think you can read too much into those run splits. Annie Haug was in effectively, it was almost like it was a different race. You know, she was that far ahead. I think the thing with Reef, when you look at this, yes, she's the overwhelming odds-on favourite. You don't get that in the men's race. She is, male or female, the standout athlete, I think, that's turning up to Hawaii. There's a lot of other interest in the men's race, but I think Reef is really the one. If she wins, it'll be a fourth consecutive time, which will be, that will, I think that ties Paula Newby-Fraser, the only other person I think has won four in a row. Argument to say that she's the best Ironman athlete ever if she does that. She could break her own course record, which she set a couple of years ago. She just looks in the form of her life. I mean, how much better can she get, I guess, is the question.
Well, we asked that every time Paula won, and we asked that every time Chrissy raced, didn't we? And each time we were treated to a new edition of performance and pushing the boundaries. Even Chrissy's last performance pushed the boundaries, maybe not in I can't remember whether she broke the record on that one, but certainly in terms of pushing through the pain barrier. And Daniela Reef's quite nicely taken on that mantle as an overwhelming favourite. So I don't think I've got any dispute with you about the top two there, really. I'd like to see it reversed, but I don't think anybody that's listening would dispute that either.
The thing with that, you just mentioned Chrissy there, and Chrissy had a bike crash before her final race.
She did.
And she didn't clock her fastest ever time, but she puts it down, I think, as her best ever performance over Ironman. And it is worth thinking that actually, despite Reef being the overwhelming favourite for this, it is 9 hours of racing. We don't know how a build-up has been. You know, sickness, injury, illness, all of those things can play into it. People do go in and have off days. Clearly, she doesn't have very many of them, but it can happen.
Well, I can remember going back to Paula Newby-Fraser. She was leading, coming into town onto a lead drive almost. And on that year, when she got passed by, was it Karen Smyers, I think, and Fernanda Keller, because she knew Karen Smyers was catching her, and she made a mistake that a rookie would make. She decided not to stop at the feed stations and take water on, thinking that not stopping might give her the advantage. And of course, it went the other way, and she just ran out of juice just before the last turn, 400 metres from the finish, and got overtaken and finished in third place. So even the best can make mistakes.
They can.
Yeah.
We probably should finish on Reef by saying that, unlike the men's race, where conditions will dictate who the more favourite athletes will depend, I think, on the conditions. It's not going to be the case in the women's race. If it's windy, Reef's the big favourite. If it's hot, Reef's the big favourite. If it's calm, Reef is the big favourite.
Okay, so that's pretty definite prediction from you there. So I think you've already mentioned several times that the men's race is a little bit more wide open. We've already touched upon some of the recent top 10 finishers that aren't in there. So let's crack on with those who have made it into your top 10. A regular in Kona, one of Will Clark's teammates, Bart Ehrnotz, if I've pronounced that right. I'm never sure exactly how to pronounce his surname, but Ehrnotz. Astronaut, I've heard people call him. So anyway.
You mentioned Will Clark there. Will's stamped his ticket for Kona. He's going to be there, but I don't have him in the top 10. Be interesting to see how he goes. But yeah, Bart Ehrnotz's background as a duathlete, often puts in a great marathon, a decent bike split, a great marathon, not the best swim. Never really in the race to challenge for the podium positions, but then runs himself up. His record's 11th, 8th, 9th, a DNF, and then 12th. He's run a 2:44 marathon in Kona, so he's one of those that will come through late.
That's the thing about Kona, isn't it? It's a non-wetsuit swim, so guys that would sometimes be able to hang on to a group in a wetsuit race Here, they don't take any prisoners. It's like watching a WTS race when they set off. The pace is frenetic. You've got, if Josh Amberger's racing and Andy Potts and some of the other, actually, don't, is Potts racing this year?
Yep.
So you've got those guys at the front. They're after a swim preem, so they're going to go out hard. And you've got some of the other guys that can keep up with them. And then people like Sanders and Keenley are usually making up a bit of time in that first 10K on the bike. So they have to really hot foot it out of town to just get onto the back of that pack. And that puts them into an oxygen deficit almost straight away. So if you like Bart Aernots there and you miss that pack, it is like a WTS race, and it's almost game over for podium positions for a few of them.
Yeah, Aernots is one of the few that his swimming hasn't come on quite as much as perhaps as some of the others. There's very few that are really weak swimmers now, and while he's not a weak swimmer, there's still going to be a deficit and he comes out of the water. In terms of the swim preem, I don't think there is actually a swim preem, but I think they're a sponsor boat. There'll be likely sponsor bonuses for people that come out of the water first, and pretty much amounts to the same thing.
They used to, yeah, I don't know when they stopped it. It used to be the first person to 40K. So you'd have to get out of the water and then the first person to 40K on the bike. And you still had to finish the race as well. You don't get anything if you DNF. So in ninth place then, so I think he's a debutant in Kona, but this guy beat Javier Gomez when Gomez was expected to dominate on his opening Ironman earlier on in the year in Australia. So Braden Curry, you've got as ninth.
Yeah, so Curry actually was in Kona last year, but okay, he struggled came in 30th. The reason he's in my top 10 and predicted ninth is because he beat Gomez on Gomez's debut, much heralded debut in Ironman Cairns in June. But in fact, both of them had great races. 7:54 for a massive course record is what Curry went, and he ran a 2:39 marathon. So certainly no slouch. He just needs to prove he can do it in Hawaii. But given he beat both Gomez and Cairns, I thought he was worth a nod.
Okay, so now he's not quite the oldest man. We've already mentioned him. No doubt he'll be coming out.
He is nowhere near the oldest man.
Well, not amongst the pros, because we've got Cameron Brown at 46. Cameron's on a streak of 18 or 19 years. But I have to say that there's one guy in the field who doesn't race as a pro anymore. Kenny Glar raced as a pro, and he was actually in the 1989 race with the Dave Scott and Mark Allen. Kenny Glar's on about his 35th consecutive Hawaii this year. So Cameron's still got a few. He's still got a double score to beat that one. But anyway, we've got Potsy. He's 41, and you've still got him down for a top 10 position.
Yeah, I have, and I wrote him off last year thinking he was too old, but he made me humble pie on that one, and he finished seventh. And he put in a great performance. So we're not going to make the same mistake again. And we've got him in as eighth.
Okay.
I mean, he's had a hell of a long career. I mean, he was a 2004 Olympian.
Yeah.
He only just missed out on the 1996 games as a swimmer. So that's how long he's been doing sports for.
He is Mr. Nice Guy as well. If you meet Andy Potts, he is. You talk about eating humble pie. Andy Potts is one of the most humble athletes out there.
He's a good guy, Potts. I like him. He's 41 now, and like you mentioned there, worth probably a mention for, I haven't got him in the top 10, but New Zealand's Cam Brown is having another go, and he's 46 now.
Okay.
And apparently he's in good shape.
He's always in good shape, Cam Brown, isn't he? He just seems to be perennially in good shape. Okay, well, look, let's the first of your German, the German train coming in Boris Stein.
It is Boris Stein, but we can gloss over this one very quickly because 2 hours ago I see he's just pulled out. So let's go straight down to number six.
Oh, well, that means that one of you, that means that we could probably put Will Clark or somebody in there. Okay. Anyway, so Patrick Nielsen then from Sweden. So Pat, he's been a coming man for a while now, hasn't he? He's been tipped for greatness, but I don't think he managed it last year, did he? I don't think.
No, he did. He came eighth last year, which wasn't bad. That was his debut last year, so he finished eighth. He's a teammate of Arnold's and Will Clark again. Super speedy runner. He's got 7:49 Ironman to his credit from Copenhagen in 2016. So that's pretty swift. He's the sort of athlete that will come off the bike with the likes of Britain's Dave McNamee, Germany's Patrick Langer, and then run like the wind and pick people off. We've got him as coming in sixth, which I think rising from eighth to sixth, pretty good shout. Might do even better than that. He's one that will benefit from calm conditions. If it's windy on the bike, he could be in trouble.
Okay, well, now this is the showstopper.
Top five.
This is the showstopper, gents and ladies. Top five, although you've gone one better than he did last year because you didn't even have him in the top 10. Lionel's at number five. I mean,
Lionel Sanders, who came second last year, will be many people's favourites for this year, and I've only got him as number five. And the reasons are a few. One of the main ones that put a seed of doubt in my mind was his race at Ironman Tromblon, where, by his own admission, he had a terrible time, got his nutrition all wrong, but not just his in-race nutrition, the way that he'd actually been fueling himself in the build-up, getting too light. He does some really good videos where he's very much heart on his sleeve character, Lionel, and he lets you know everything that he's thinking. And he even hinted that he had a slight eating disorder, which is obviously a very serious topic heading into that Ironman. And he thinks he's got himself back on track now, but Ironman Mont Tremblant was a fairly recent Ironman. He didn't go particularly well. So that's one reason. My second reason is that more often than not, Ironman Hawaii goes down to be a runner's race rather than a biker's race.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I was chatting with somebody about this the other day. I think only Norman Stadler led handsomely off the bike and has been able to make it stick in recent years.
Yeah, I'd agree. And there's been a couple like sort of Sebastian Keenley and Freddie van Leer who you say are strong bikers who have held tough on the run. Mm. But with some of the caliber of the runners in this race, Sanders is going to be looking to bark big and then run. He's a great runner and run solidly as well. But more often than not, as we said, it turns into a runner's race, which is why I've only got him in at number five.
I think I'd agree. I think the only thing is that if it becomes quite windy, I think Sanders will benefit from that, and the lighter guys will maybe struggle a little bit. But you know, we don't know that yet, do we?
No, we'll see how it plays out on the day. So number four.
Yeah, Dave. So we've got Dave McNamee. So Dave had a great race last year. Ran himself up into. He just didn't make it up to Sanders, did he?
Right.
Yeah, Dave McNamee. Great competitor. He was based in Leeds for a while as part of the performance squad there, and he's gone on to do really well at the long course. So what's he been doing this year? Because he seems to have been a bit of a quiet year for him this year.
By his own admission, it's been a very quiet year, and partly that's been a mixture of him being sick for a couple of races. He hit an iron block on the road when he was in Ironman Vichy when he was leading. Vichy 70.3 was leading. That cost him that. So I've actually spoken to him a couple of weeks ago, and he said it feels like he hasn't raced. But I would argue better to come in underdone than overcooked.
Yeah.
For somewhere like Hawaii, he's done well there. Like we said, he went 8:07, which is the seventh fastest time ever when he came third last year. He's never been beaten by a British racer over Ironman distance. He's always run well in Hawaii. He's finished just outside, I think, just outside the top 10 in his first two appearances there. This will be the fourth time that he's gone back now. He spent much of last year training with Jan Frodeno, where he learned an awful lot. Frodeno is obviously missing this race through to a stress fracture in his SI joint. So I just fancy if it goes down to being a runner's race, I fancy McNamee has the ability and the temperament to do really well yet again. And he paces it so well, Simon, I think. So he always comes through strong at the end.
Well, McNamee and Langer were great examples last year of athletes just demonstrating what I call emotional intelligence. Actually, because you know I was racing last year, the point, I actually saw the pros coming back when you go off the Queen K and down to Kauai High. I was making my way up to Harvey. Sanders was on his charge. I think he was chasing Worth and Keenly, had gone out, and Sanders was just stood up, just looked like he was trying to bend his bike in half, and everybody else was trying to hang on behind him. Dave McNamee and Langer didn't go with that. They held back, trusting their running, and others that did try to go with him, I think O'Donnell might have been one, blew up. And that's down to something that I heard Craig Alexander talk about. You know, often the guys who are going to do well are the ones who make the right decisions on race day. So Dave's made good decisions. I always think, and this was confirmed by a couple of other of the coaches at Leeds, that Dave sometimes doesn't back himself on the bike enough. And probably if he wants to finish in the top three again, he might need to do that, just to trust his fitness and his running and just back himself on the bike a little bit, because he's undoubtedly got the talent.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, that's a slightly moot point, isn't it? Very hard to argue either which way on that. It's obviously Dave would really be the only person who actually knows that. I know when I spoke to him earlier, like I said, a couple of weeks ago, last year, it wasn't like they were sitting up on the bike and soft pedaling. They were going at it, and it's fine lines. So they were still biking hard. Him and Langer were still biking hard, and they needed to keep that gap to within. And looking at it, it turned out to be a manageable gap for all but Lionel Sanders. And obviously Langer put in who came off the bike with Dave McNamee put in a faster run split to win him the race. So they almost judged it to perfection last year.
Yeah, I think it was just some of them overbiked, didn't they, to try and stay with Sanders, and Dave and Langer got it just right. Like you say, it's a very fine line on that way back there. When you're getting hotter, if you overjudge it, once you've got too hot there, you aren't really getting your heat down until you stop and sit in the shade. But the next guy you've got in the top three then, he knows the Kona course well. He's won there. He's been doing okay this year, I think. Did all right in Challenge Roth. So this top three, I think, is going to be very close, and I think it could go to any of these guys. So you've got Sebastian. Sorry, just say it's you've got Sebastian Keenly in third here. Then,
yeah, the 2014 champion Sebastian Keenly, who is wonderfully consistent, has had a good year. He won Roth in 7:46. He missed the Ironman 70.3 world champ, so kept his powder dry for this. He also booked his spot for Hawaii last November in Cozumel, which freed him up to race Roth. He sort of avoided the big guns this year. I think Keenly knows what it takes. If the wind gets up, I think he's definitely a really solid contender once more.
But you've got him down to get beaten, probably in a foot race.
I have got him down to get beaten. Second place, I've got Javier Gomez.
Yes. So not winning on his debut, but probably I think he'd be quite happy with a second there. But, you know, tell us why you've put him second and not winning. Because I think a lot of people would have him as a shoo-in once he turned to Ironman.
Well, people tend not to win. In a way, on debut, you've got to go back to Luke Van Leerd in 1996 for that.
For the men.
Sorry, I should have said that, because obviously Chrissy Wellington won on debut, didn't she, in 2007? So I mean, that's 22 years ago, and often often races need to finish on the podium first before they then go on to win the race. I think Gomez is good on the bike, but I don't think he's going to be blasting away necessarily at the front with the likes of Cameron Worth, Andrew Starkovic, Lionel Sanders. I think he's cannier than that. So therefore, if he gets off the bike with someone like Patrick Langer, who we are, another plot spoiler we're going to come on to, can he run quicker than a 2:39 marathon in Hawaii? And for this occasion, I'm arguing that he can't.
Okay, I like the justification there, so I've got no arguments. And so now we're coming back to the man who knows he can run 2:40, because he's done it not just in winning last year, but he did it the previous year, didn't he? Running through to, I can't remember where he finished on his first go. Was it
finished third?
Yeah. So he did it. He did it that first time as well. And if you see some of the footage of that first one, he was going past Ben Hoffman, like Ben Hoffman was out for a little trot, and Langer was being chased by a rabid dog.
Yeah. So despite a year that's been nothing particularly to write home about, I've tipped Patrick Langer, Germany's Patrick Langer, to defend his Kona crown and take the win.
Yeah, I do think, you know, sometimes too much is written into how people have performed early on in the year. You know, Langer said earlier, didn't he, that everything was geared towards Kona. And sometimes if you're having to show your cards early on, you've reached a peak of fitness, it's maybe not possible to get back or get better than that by the time you get to Kona in October. Mark Allen never used to really show up outside of Nice, did he, until he got to Hawaii, and it didn't seem to do him any problems at all. And I do think that a lot of the athletes that turn up here are perhaps over-raced, and as you said earlier, it's better to be a little underdone before you get here than overdone. And because Langer's had a quiet year, I wonder whether that might play in his favour.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I see it as well. You need the experience of having raced here, but history shows that the experience of having raced here before is often a very good thing. And also, if you're racing multiple Ironman, then, and some of these athletes have to do that to get the qualification points, but the leading contenders, less so. Most of them carry a huge number of points over from last year, although obviously that will all change under the new system now. Mm. But I do think that the ones that race cautiously and probably get their Ironman racing done in the earlier in the summer and then have a long prep typically tend to do better.
Yeah, I agree absolutely with that. So I think we're agreed.
So when you say you agree, do you agree with both my top 10s then?
I agree with that. I agree with that last statement that those athletes who come here are a little fresher. But no, I don't think I agree entirely with your top 10. I think the top three for the men is going to be very competitive, but I don't have an argument with that or the justification for it. And likewise for the ladies, I can see your justification and I buy that for the three ladies up there. Maybe I'll take issue with some of the guys you've left out, but I don't think they're going to be threatening the guys or the girls you've left out. I don't think they're going to be threatening for a podium spot. So on the whole, I would agree with that. Maybe Sanders is the only one that might throw something up. But I think what we should do is come back in November. We can do a wrap up for the notable events and happenings in the triathlon world for this season. And we can pick over the top 10 results for this year's Kona and see if I can take you to task on any of them again.
Yeah, you can pick me apart.
Yep. How does that sound?
Sounds good. Look forward to it.
Okay. Well, there you go. Listeners, thank you very much to Tim Hemming once again, our intrepid forecaster of the male and female top 10 for Kona, which when you're listening to this will be happening in just a couple of days. You can get it all on Ironman TV or whatever they call it now, but I'll be out there. Maybe I'll do a live broadcast from the side of the course as it's all going on. But thank you once again for listening. I appreciate you being here, as I always say. I know you've got lots of other choices, so thanks for coming back. Tim, any last words before you go?
Just say thanks, Simon, and enjoy your time out in Hawaii. I'll be in Dubrovnik for triathlon, so the alternative Kona, I'm going to call it.
Fantastic. Okay, well, listeners, once again, thanks very much. Enjoy the racing in Kona. I hope you manage to stay up all night. Get yourself some Hawaiian coffee to do that, and Tim and I will be back in November to wrap up the 2018 triathlon season. Bye-bye for now. That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today, and I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon and 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.